So I mentioned L'Hôpital's rule at the end of the last lecture, and now we will actually look at L'Hôpital's rule and give a proof. It's a nice application of the Cauchy mean value theorem. So theorem, suppose that f and g are differentiable functions on an open interval I, and that p is a point of I if the limit as x goes to p of f of x equals the limit of x goes to p of g of x equals 0. And if the limit as x goes to p of f prime x over g prime x exists and equals a real number l, then the limit as x goes to p of f of x over g of x equals l. So I'm sure you've all used L'Hôpital's rule to help you calculate some tricky limits, so this is a fairly familiar result. Here's the proof. Fix a real number a greater than l by the formula there is a foot number q bigger than p such that if p is less than x less than q, then f prime x over g prime x is less than a. But now, if p is less than s less than t less than q, then ft minus fs over gt minus gs equals f prime x over g prime x for some x between s and t by Cauchy's mean value theorem. It follows then from the equation above that ft minus fs over gt minus gs is less than a, where a is slightly larger than the limit l. Now let s tend to p and evoke the hypothesis about the zero limits of f and g at p to conclude that ft over gt is less than or equal to a when t is between p and q. Since a is an arbitrary number to the right of l, we conclude that the lim sup as t goes to p from the right of ft over gt is less than or equal to l. Very similar arguments show that the lim inf as t goes to p from the right of ft over gt is bigger than or equal to l. The lim sup as t goes to p from the left of ft over gt is less than or equal to l. And the lim inf as t goes to p from the left of ft over gt is bigger than or equal to l. Putting all these four things together, we conclude that the desired limit exists and equals l. So that's L'Hôpital's rule. A closely related result, another version of L'Hôpital's rule, is this. And I won't supply the proof because it's very similar, but it's interesting philosophically to see the statement. Suppose that f and g are differentiable functions on an open interval I and that p is a point of I. If the limit as x goes to p of f of x equals the limit as x goes to p of g of x equals plus or minus infinity, and if the limit as x goes to p of f prime x divided by g prime x exists and equals a real number l, then the limit as x goes to p of f of x over g of x equals l. So L'Hôpital's rule works when f and g both tend to 0 at the point p, and they work when f and g both tend to infinity, plus or minus infinity at the point p. So here's a very interesting example. Let f of x be log of absolute x, an absolute value raised to the x squared power, and we want to look at the limit as x goes to 0 of f of x. And you can see that as x goes to 0, log x mod x in absolute value tends to infinity, but x squared tends to 0. So we have two competing forces here. So let's define capital F of x to be the log of f, which is x squared, times the log of x, which is the log of x divided by 1 over x squared. The numerator tends to infinity as x tends to 0, because as x tends to 0, log of absolute x tends to minus infinity, and then the log of the absolute value of that tends to plus infinity, and the downstairs 1 over x squared tends to infinity as x goes to 0. So L'Hôpital's second rule applies, and the limit, therefore, of log x divided by 1 over x squared is the limit of the derivative of log x divided by the derivative of 1 over x squared, which is the limit of 1 over x log x divided by minus 2 over x cubed, which simplifies to the limit as x goes to 0 of minus x squared over 2 log x. And you can see now that the numerator tends to 0 and the denominator tends to minus infinity, so this tends to 0. So we just calculated the limit of the log of the function we really want to study, and its limit is 0, so the limit of the original function must be 1, because the log of 1 is 0. Proposition, let f be an invertible function on an open interval a, b with non-zero derivative at a point x at a, b, let capital X be f of little x, then f inverse prime at capital X exists and equals 1 over little f prime at x. And the proof really is a formality. Let capital T be different from capital X. Look at f inverse capital T minus f inverse capital X over capital T minus capital X, which is a Newton quotient for f inverse, and this is equal to 1 over, using the fact that f of little t is capital T and f of little x is capital X, This simplifies to 1 over little f t minus little f x over t minus x. Since f prime x is not 0, the denominator doesn't vanish for t close to x, and when you take the limit, you end up with 1 over f prime little x, which is what we want. Example, we know that the function fx equals x to the k for k a positive integer is 1 to 1 indifferentiable on the interval 0, 1. Moreover, the derivative k times x to the k minus 1 never vanishes on that interval, therefore the proposition applies. And for a point capital X in the open interval 0, 1, we find that f inverse prime is 1 over little f prime x, which is 1 over little f prime of x to the 1 over k, which is k times 1 over x to the 1 minus 1 over k, which is 1 over k times x to the 1 over k minus 1. In other words, x to the 1 over k prime is 1 over k capital X to the 1 over k minus 1, which is a formula, of course, that you all know, but now we've proved it. We conclude this lecture by saying a few words about higher derivatives. If f is a differentiable function on an interval I, then we may ask whether the function f prime is differentiable. If it is, then we denote the derivative of f prime either by f double prime or f super parenthesis 2 or d squared dx squared f, that's Leibniz's notation, or d squared f dx squared, which is also Leibniz's notation. And we call this the second derivative of f. Likewise, the derivative of the k minus first derivative, if it exists, is called the kth derivative, and it's denoted either f with k primes, or f superscript parenthesis k, or dk dxkf, or dkf dxk. We cannot even consider whether fk exists, the kth derivative of f exists, at a point unless the k minus 1 derivative exists in the neighborhood of that point, because you calculate the kth derivative, of course, by differentiating the k minus first derivative. If f is k times differentiable on an open interval I, and if each of the derivatives f1, f2, through fk is continuous on I, then we say the function f is k times continuously differentiable on I, and we write f is an element of C superscript k I. Obviously, there is some redundancy in this definition, since the continuity of f superscript j minus 1 follows from the existence of fj. Thus, only the continuity of the last derivative really needs to be checked. Continuously differentiable functions are useful tools in analysis. And here's an interesting example. For k is equal to 1, 2, etc., f sub k of x equals x to the k plus 1 if x is bigger than or equal to 0, and minus x to the k plus 1 if x is less than 0, will be k times continuously differentiable on the reals, but will fail to be k plus 1 times differentiable. More dramatically, an analysis similar to the one we used on the Weierstrass-Noether differentiable function shows that the function dkx equals summation j equals 1 to infinity, 3 to the j divided by 4 to the j plus jk times sine of 4 to the jx is k times continuously differentiable, but will not be k plus 1 times differentiable at any point. The reason this example works is because if you differentiate it k, term by term, k times, you get the Weierstrass-Noether differentiable function. A more refined notion of smoothness continuity of functions is that of Holder continuity or Lipschitz continuity. If f is a function on an open interval I, and if alpha is greater than 0, less than or equal to 1, then we say that f satisfies the Lipschitz condition of order alpha on I if there is a constant m such that for all st and I, we have absolute value fs minus ft less than or equal to m times the quantity s minus t to the alpha. Such a function is said to be of class Lip alpha I. Clearly, a function of class Lip alpha is uniformly continuous on I. For if epsilon is greater than 0, then we may take delta to be epsilon divided by m all to the 1 over alpha power. It follows that for s minus t absolute value less than delta, we have absolute fs minus ft less than or equal to m times absolute s minus t to the alpha, which is less than m times epsilon over m. That's delta to the alpha power, and that's, of course, just epsilon. Interestingly, when alpha is bigger than 1, the class Lip alpha contains only constants. For in this instance, the inequality fs minus ft less than or equal to m times absolute s minus t to the alpha leads to absolute value fs minus ft over s minus t less than or equal to m times absolute s minus t to the alpha minus 1. And because alpha minus 1 is bigger than 0, letting s tend to t yields that f prime t exists for every t it equals 0. And so by a corollary from the last lecture, f is constant. Instead of trying to extend the definition of lip alpha to alpha bigger than 1, it is customary to define a class of functions ck alpha for k equals 0, 1, 2, 3, etc., and for alpha greater than 0, less than or equal to 1, by the condition that f be of class ck and the kth derivative be an element of lip alpha. We leave it as an exercise for you to verify that ck alpha is a subset of cl beta if either k is greater than l or k equals l and alpha is bigger than or equal to beta. In more advanced studies and analysis, is it appropriate to replace lip1i and more generally ck1 with another space invented by Zygmund, defined in a more subtle fashion using second differences as in an example that we've done earlier? These matters exceed the scope of this book, but we shall make a few remarks about them in the exercises. Thank you for listening, and have a happy Thanksgiving.